Jim, I want to just talk to you about the Harding Symposium and your thoughts on what that is and should be and your role in it, and then maybe we can launch into a little bit about looking at Warren Harding and his administration in a different light. So let's start with the symposium here at OSU Marion, and what do you think about putting together a sort of formalized look at Harding and his era?
Well, Dave, I can tell you I'm really pleased you guys are doing this, because I really think it is the time right now to take another look at Warren Harding. I think, as I've told you many times, my research in writing this book led me to see pretty clearly that his reputation as a president was totally overwhelmed by scandals, innuendo, and mythology that grew up after his presidency. And my own view, after looking at what he did as president, is that he was a very good president, not just a mediocre president, and certainly not what he's labeled as, which is consistently labeled as one of our worst presidents. He did a lot of very important things and stood for some very important principles and policies. And the problem is that all those things have been just completely overshadowed by the absolute focus, the laser focus on scandals and other things, many of which he had nothing to do with, some of which, you know, I wrote obviously about an affair that he had with Carrie Phillips, but that affair has been badly misunderstood, mainly because these letters have not been available for all this time. And once you look at them, you see it in a different light. You see it as a relationship that was clearly a very strong love relationship between he and Carrie Phillips that lasted for over 15 years. It was no Monica Lewinsky or other John Edwards type situation. It was just kind of a tragic situation, but nevertheless a very strong love affair. So I think the time is now to relook at Warren Harding, and I'm really pleased that you guys are doing it. Really should. It's important, I think, that its genesis is in Marion.
Let me ask you, Jim, isn't it surprising on the surface that a Democrat would come to this thought that Warren Harding, a Republican, was actually, as you described him, a very good president?
Yeah, you know, I in my first book that I wrote called Linking Rings was about my great-grandfather, William Durbin, who was from Kenton, Ohio, which is about 30 miles west of Marion. And my great-grandfather knew Warren Harding, but was a Democrat and was on the other side of politics at that time. And my great-grandfather was very influential in helping Woodrow Wilson get a lot of votes in Ohio and helping him get the nomination in Baltimore in 1912. So I have been a very strong proponent of Woodrow Wilson in the past, and I have felt very strongly about his role in the world history. I've had to really seriously take another hard look at that now, having viewed the world from Warren Harding's perspective and from Carrie Phillips' perspective. The letters that I have access to really show a very big debate between them about who was responsible for the First World War, what it all meant, what our role should be in the world, and what our role should be in that war. And I have come to see that what Wilson did and the way he conducted himself caused a lot of the disaster that happened in the rest of that century. We really came in on the sides of the Allies and ended up with a peace that was lopsided and that was unfair to Germany, and that gave rise to Adolf Hitler directly as a result of all of that. And I think that Wilson made some very strategic blunders, and he did them in good faith. He really did believe that making the world safe for democracy was the way to go, but Warren Harding saw it differently, so I had to start looking at it differently. And as you look at it differently and say, well, maybe it isn't our role to go change other people's governments by force. Maybe our role is to be the best example to the world of a democracy that we can be and to defend ourselves, but not to go and interfere with other people's governments. Maybe that is the correct thing, and that's what Harding believed. And in fact, I think the world would have been very different had he been president and had he brokered that peace at the end of the war, and not Wilson. So it is a real about face for me in that sense. It really was a quite an awakening for me to really start looking at these things, and it's these letters that caused me to do so.
Well, let's explore a little bit more about what the evidence is that you see that leads you to say Harding was a very good president, as opposed to the conventional wisdom that he was one of the worst, if not the worst, president. But you know, you talk about his stance on the war and what might have happened had he run earlier, and also the treaty that the arms limitation treaty that he signed. What are some of the things, some of the evidence that, as you get past and beyond the scandal, really leads you to that conclusion?
Well, I start almost every talk that I give about this book by saying, I want to knock you people off your horse a little bit on Warren Harding and tell you a few things that I will guarantee most of you have never heard, if not the fact that none of you have never heard this. The fact of the matter is, Harding was in the presidency almost the same amount of time that John Kennedy was. They both died in office, one in 1923, one in 1963. And so they're 40 years apart. Kennedy is seen as one of the greatest of all time, Harding one of the worst. But in fact, if you look, compare their records, apples for apples, you'll see that Harding did a number of things that were quite courageous, and in some ways his record exceeds Kennedy's. For example, he went to Birmingham, Alabama in his first year in 1921 to make a civil rights speech, telling the whites in a very big crowd that democracy is a lie if blacks are not provided with political equality. And that's the first president to go into the Deep South. The Civil War was still very much on everyone's mind. It wasn't that long after the Civil War, and he had the courage to go down there and make that speech. Kennedy obviously also stood for civil rights, but you know, this was a much more vibrant and bold move by Harding than anything Kennedy did in the civil rights front. So I think, you know, that point. Secondly, he started the first Office of the Budget, which was critical to try to stabilize our spending and our government after the First World War, because, you know, taxes had risen dramatically during the war, and, you know, there was a lot of problem financially around the world, and he got a hold of that. He also, as you pointed out, was responsible for the very first arms limitation treaty that was signed by multiple governments after the First World War, the so-called Washington Conference. That, in and of itself, should have gotten him the Nobel Peace Prize. And then he also was responsible for doing various things to help stabilize the country after the war. You cannot imagine how much this country was in an uproar at the end of the war, with the labor movement in particular, that had been emboldened by the Bolsheviks in Russia and, you know, world communism and so forth. And Harding held out an olive branch and let Eugene Debs out of prison, a very symbolic and very courageous thing for him to do, because Debs was a socialist who ran for president multiple times, but was a real hero to the labor movement. And, you know, Warren Harding saw the opportunity to make some peace and to hold out an olive branch, and he did so. So, you know, those things are all very important and very courageous and make him a very courageous leader. And are none of those things does anybody really talk about other than the Washington Conference when they talk about Harding's presidency.
And your premises or your theory is that that's all been covered up by Teapot Dome, by allegations of sex scandals, all of which Harding was dead and couldn't defend himself from.
Yeah, I really think that two things. One, that there was nobody there to defend him. You know, Florence Harding died within a year of his death, and they had no children. So there was nobody there to really maintain the legacy, per se. He had, you know, brothers and sisters, but, you know, with Jacqueline Kennedy, for example, she began to burnish Kennedy's reputation, you know, from the day of his assassination forward. And so you need somebody to carry that torch, as it were, and to make sure that you keep people honest about what they're doing. And unfortunately, there was nobody there to do that for him. And then I think that as a result, these scandals that came about, Teapot Dome is the best example, no evidence ever under all the looking that's been done at this that Harding had any connection to it. It was, you know, a Secretary of the Interior that he picked who was at the time a senator from a western state. He was a good pick for the cabinet and was unanimously confirmed without objection by the Senate when he was picked by Harding. So, you know, sometimes things happen and sometimes people are corrupt, but, you know, that shouldn't define Harding as he had nothing to do with it, and there's no evidence that he tried to cover it up or any of that sort of thing. And yet that's the one term that people remember about the Harding administration, Teapot Dome. So I think this stuff has just overwhelmed all the good that he did, and it's really because there was nobody there to carry the torch.
What would you like to see going forward in terms of this Harding Symposium and an ongoing effort to explore both him as a president and the era of the 20s that were so formative in our country? How would you like to see this effort continue?
Well, another thing that I tell people is that if you really look at history and if you look at turning points in history, you know, over the whole history of mankind, you could really rank various times as pivotal. And one of those times is the First World War. That really was the big bang to modern history. Everything, just like as, you know, everything descended into a black hole, and then what sprang out of it was what, you know, the mess that happened in the 20th century and what we're still dealing with on so many fronts. And so, to me, you know, we spend, if you go to the bookstore, you'll see 5,000 books on World War II, which was merely a consequence of what happened in World War I. It's not the prime mover. The prime mover is World War I, and therefore what Harding did during that period as senator, how he saw things, and then what he did as president, should be studied more, as the whole period should be studied more and looked at again with the new lens of, you know, of what we know about history now 100 years later. And so I think that this particular symposium can help start that re-examination, and to me it's just critical. That period of time is critical in world history.
And it's important not just for history, but for current events. Many of the things that are happening now in many ways relate to the actions that Harding took or didn't take during his administration, don't they?
Yeah, that's very true. I need to go back and look at this a little bit more, but I have my own recollection that at various points in time when George Bush was pushing to invade Iraq, I have a specific recollection of him being at the Woodrow Wilson Foundation and making a speech there. And at the time I thought, well, this is no coincidence. You know, Woodrow Wilson was the guy who came up with the idea that we should make the world a democracy and that would make it safer. And of course we know that when he pursued that policy in World War I, it ended up in a disaster. And so, you know, I think that same issue arises again today as we're going around the world thinking, particularly Iraq, and this is less about Afghanistan, which I have different feelings about, but Iraq, clearly the idea was to go in and get rid of a dictator and make it a democracy. And that is something that Warren Harding would have stood up and said, this is none of our business to do that, because he stood up when Wilson asked us to go to war and get rid of the Kaiser. He said, it's none of our business to do that. That's not what our role should be. And so I think the point is, it's not that it's never something you should do, but it's certainly something you should do with a lot of concern, and shouldn't just happen like it happened in Iraq. And that's why I think people need to study history. They need to see these things and see what happens when you do things like this with noble purpose. Sometimes you can be creating a monster, which is exactly what happened at the end of the First World War and exactly what Warren Harding warned about.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you, Jim, here during the summer in July, and hopefully for future events as they come along. And we're looking forward to your next book also.
Yeah, well, great, Dave, and thanks for doing all this and putting it all together. It's really important.